buckle up and arrive alive. Come on down to the patio pod.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the second episode of the patio pod. Again, my name is Tyler Lynch.
And my name is Garrett Lynch.
And so we are now recording and now live on our second episode of the patio pod.
Woo!
Yeah, who would have thought? Shout out. Our first episode is now at least over 90 views and maybe near the triple figures on viewership-wise, which is, like, I know, like, that might not sound like a lot, but, like, for us, that's, like, actually really crazy.
It's just funny how we got this far already.
It's like we've gotten this far, so shout out to all our friends and family who have supported us, as well as the random people that have, like, somehow become fans of this.
I've had podcast. The idea of just making this, and I know that both of us are in sports and we really like talking about different things going on, so I'm glad we were able to finally put it together.
Yep, we put it together, and here we are, the patio pod, and now we are here, and now we're recording, and it's a lot of fun, and we got future ideas that we are so excited to do, but we're here, and we've made it. And so now, without further ado, let's get deep into sports tonight. So, kind of, we're going to start off with the same, like, structure where we're going to go NBA first and NASCAR last, but we're going to add two more sports tonight. So, but without further ado, we are going to start with the NBA, and we're going to talk about two teams that are doing really good right now. One of them is the Philadelphia 76ers, and the other one is the Memphis Grizzlies. So let's start off with the 76ers, who look like the beginning winners of the trade that they have done. So, Gary, you can start off more in detail with that.
Yeah, so far they've gotten James Harden, and wow, he's been playing really great.
Yeah.
It's been unbelievable. So far, he's played, as of this podcast, with the Timberwolves, or he's played playing against the Timberwolves, and also the Knicks. James Harden, he scored 27 points, 8 rebounds, and 12 assists against the Timberwolves. Holy cow. And then against the Knicks, 29 points, 10 rebounds, and 16 assists. Almost 2 triple-doubles already.
Yeah.
And Embiid, he's had 37 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists in the Knicks game.
How much? Do you know how much he got during the
Timberwolves game? No, I'm not sure.
All right.
I just wanted to
I think it was at least over 28 points because he like has had like 16 straight 25-plus point games.
I mean, it probably was, but overall, the duo is working out so far.
Yes, and like what's, you know, intriguing to see watching the 76ers, like watching highlights of them, is just how happy they are playing together. Like not just, you know, Joel and Harden, but the whole team's just like they look like they're stressed, like they're no longer stressed, they're stress relieved, and that it's like we're finally moved on from all the drama that was happening all throughout earlier this season, and now, heck, even the drama of last year, because, you know, what kind of started everything was Harden wanted to go to the 76ers, and they were about ready to trade him to the 76ers, the Rockets were, but instead it didn't work out, but now Harden's on the 76ers, where he truly wanted to be at. Since he left the Rockets, it wasn't with the Nets. And so now we see that they're gelling really good, as well as, you know, that a lot of people were questioning, you know, was Harden willing to, like, step down a little bit to allow the main scorer of the team, Joel Embiid, to still score? And, I mean, the answer's kind of yes, because, like, Embiid's still doing his thing, averaging 25-plus. Yes. But Harden's still averaging a triple-double and has dropped 27 and 29 doing that. So
as long as, I kind of mentioned this in the last podcast, but as long as James Harden, he is able to let Embiid kind of get his points, get the amount he needs, then we should be good. And Harden can then get his own. And so far, that's working out. Now, I kind of have a question for you.
Yes.
What do you think about Tobias Harris? Do you think he's going to fit in with all this? I've heard he's not played great yet with this group.
Well, yeah, I haven't heard about any of him, like, all season, really. It was just that, I mean, the only thing really I heard about Tobias Harris this season is him stepping up because, you know, he was going to have to become the second best player on the Sixers.
Yeah, not Ben Simmons.
Not Ben Simmons, because Ben Simmons didn't show up and play. But we'll see how he fits, you know? I mean, when you're getting, like, half the team's point from two guys, and then you also got Maxey.
Yes. He's kind of the third component right now, even above Harris.
Yeah.
Scoring, and he's doing a great job.
He's a more... He's a better player than Harris right now, and I mean, you kind of said it a while back, like, there's a big three right there, not just, you know, those Harden and Embiid. You have a big three with Maxey, so that's what we're really looking at. I mean, Harris is Harris, and I know they were talking about trading him to get rid of cap space, so, like, that's how much the Sixers cared about him, or are caring about him, so we'll see what goes on from there. I mean, yeah, he's really not, has been an important piece, but... I mean, the matter is if he can not, as long as, I guess, really, as long as he helps the team, not hurts the team, and that's all you really got to ask for a role player, you know?
I think he could probably do that. I just know that he has the potential to be really a great player.
Yeah.
He's the 6'8", small forward that can shoot and drive to the rim, so we'll see how he does. I think he's trying to make the most out of this opportunity.
Yes. Because this could get him a ring on his finger.
Yes.
So
this year.
This year.
Like, with the Nets, it might not be this year.
There's no way it's going to be this year. So,
but I also want to highlight the 76ers. This is really huge. The Embiid, he went 23 of 27 from the foul line. And Harden was 10 for 10 in that Knicks game. So you have two people that can get shots to the rim at any time. And now... they can also get fouled and make the shots at the free throw line.
Yeah.
He had 23 points. So he had 37 points in the game. 23 of those are from the line. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, no. Wasn't Harden doing that when he was with the Rockets, where he would get like half of his points and like get like 23 off the foul line while he was with the Rockets?
That's how he would have a high scoring average.
Yeah.
Is because... even if he was shooting bad, he'd always get to the line. And the league has kind of tried to force some players to change how they shoot.
Yeah.
Because they're taking advantage of
getting fouled. They're intentionally trying to force their way to get contact with a guy. Like, they're basically putting their shoulder into a guy.
Yeah.
And then they get called. And then the defender gets called for the foul and not for them, even though they threw a shoulder into them. So
they're like what Shaq said, barbecue chicken. And, you know.
Yeah. Barbecue chicken. So, well, I mean, Embiid's doing some barbecue chicken, but...
And Chuck and Shaq are really impressed.
No, yeah, he's really stepped up his game. It's just... only thing we really got to see about the 76ers, I would say, is how well they're going to do in the playoffs. Which, I would say, they have to make the conference finals. If not, they should make the finals, so...
Whenever they played against the Raptors, this, I believe, was 2019.
It was 19, yes.
That Kawhi Leonard made that shot over Ben Simmons.
It was over Embiid, actually.
Oh, over Embiid. That's right. So, man, I wonder if him Embiid, like, that was finally the turning point. Where he's like, I was so close to getting there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's video of him, like, crying, like, right as the ball went in because he's like, he felt so bad that he just lost the... you know, going to the conference finals. And that was a really good team that year because that had, like, Jimmy Butler on the team. And they were expected to do some good things and at least make the conference finals, if not the NBA finals. But they weren't able to because of Kawhi Leonard being Kawhi Leonard on the Raptors that year. And so we'll see what happens, you know. We'll see how – I mean, yes, Embiid, you know, the last couple of seasons he's been an MVP candidate, so he's really stepped up his game. It's just a matter of what the – Sixers are going to do, and we'll just see how well they gel as a team in the playoffs, because that's when it matters the most, you know? So.
Yeah, he went from eating Nutella sandwiches to bringing it in the paint with the barbecue chicken.
With the barbecue chicken.
Oh, gosh. So, next up, what do you think about the Grizzlies?
I've heard people tell me they're the most exciting team in NBA, and that, well, we live in... the Midwest, we live in Missouri, and like a lot of my Missouri friends are like, we need to drive down and go watch the Memphis Grizzlies.
I wanted to do that, yeah.
I mean, I want to do that too, because they're the most exciting, one of the most exciting teams in the NBA right now. And it's all because of, well, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why they're as good as they are, but I mean, one of them is...
We know the main one.
We know the main one, and that is Mr. Ja Morant, who is an absolute superstar player, who last night dropped his career high 52 against the Spurs. And I mean, he had some crazy moments during that 52-point game. One was the... Well, shout out to Steven Adams. Threw like a lob all the way full court, and it was like 4 seconds left, and Morant caught it, threw it up, and it went in. And then also, he had a monster dunk. Probably the poster of the year, Morant did, against someone on the Spurs. I don't know who, because who really cares about the Spurs right now, besides DeJounte Murray. Where it was crazy, because like, Morant like jumped out of the paint almost to dunk on like a center, and he's a point guard. So it's really, really crazy to see how much potential he has, and he's definitely, I would say, a top three MVP candidate. Up there with DeRozan and Embiid. I don't know if he's the MVP, but you know, he's up there.
Well, just really quick, I don't think DeRozan should be up there. I think the Bulls are good.
You don't think DeRozan's up there, even though he's like had 35 plus like the last?
And a bajillion game winners and stuff. But I don't know. No, I don't put him there.
Well, I don't... I mean, I don't think DeRozan's going to win MVP. I think, but do you think Morant is going to be up there?
Yes.
You think he deserves to be up there?
Yes. I still think Curry's up there, too.
I mean, I think he's still up there, but he's not like, I mean, at the beginning of the year, everybody just wanted to give the MVP trophy to him, but then he kind of hit a slump. But, I mean, the Warriors are still the freaking Warriors. And I mean, you know, I think it was mainly because Curry went into a slump because he felt the pressure and excitement of getting the all-time three-point record and probably, you know, jacked up getting Klay back, because whenever you have your second-best player, who could be a best player on, like, 75% of the teams in the NBA, come back after being gone for 2 full years, I'm sure he was pretty jacked up about that. But,
yeah,
I mean, yeah, I think Morant's, you know, very high in the MVP voting, at least I would say first or second. You would put Embiid first or second, obviously. I think it's down to those two right now.
Who would you put first?
I would have to go with... That's really hard. I mean, would you go with Embiid? I mean, my gut tells me Embiid.
I think I would go with Embiid.
I would go with Embiid. I felt like he got ripped off of winning it last year, but I know he was out for a little bit. But, I mean, Jokic did great stuff. So I'm not saying like Jokic didn't deserve it, but I thought Embiid was going to win it last year. But yeah, I say, well, everybody was saying the reason why Embiid should win it is that he was doing great, and the Sixers were still like a top four team, even though they had all the issues going around with Ben Simmons and all the drama, where basically, I'm sure every press conference they were getting asked, hey, so what about your teammate who doesn't want to be there? So I'm sure that, you know, all that pressure outside and inside of the team, you know, that could have easily affected the 76ers, and everybody thought the Sixers were going to collapse this year. But instead, Embiid's averaging well over 25, 27 points, and it's getting better and better each year. So I think that's why people are giving him the MVP, and I say, you know, heck, if he's doing what he's doing, I think he'll win MVP. So, but Morant's definitely going to win one very, very soon for how well he's playing. So
overall, yeah, taking the Memphis Grizzlies from last year, they were 8th in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
Now to 3rd. That's a big jump.
That's a big jump. Well, it's just now the whole team's clicking. Last year was their year, because they were all really young guys, to get gelled together, because that's obviously big, getting the core structure of a team to where they all fit and they all feel comfortable, because, I mean, sometimes that takes a long time. Well, at least with younger guys, to develop them and make them great. And, yeah, whenever they... I mean, what everybody, the game that made everybody knew that the Grizzlies are going to be a great team was that play-in tournament game against the Warriors, where Morant went off. Incredible game. Everybody, I think, became a fan of him after that night. Yep. And they kept that momentum, even though I think they got swept by the Jazz, or it was only like 5 games, but you just knew because of that game that this is going to be a team to beat in the future. And they've, I mean, yeah, Morant's great, but they're great coaching wise. They play defense. They got great role players. They got great players in general.
Yeah, their core overall is pretty young.
Yes, it's pretty young.
With players such as, well, Morant's the main one, but Jaren Jackson Jr.
Someone who everybody thought should have been an all-star this year, so.
Yeah, I don't think he's there yet.
He's not there yet. He's really close.
And Desmond Bane, look at him.
He's a good two-way player, right?
Yeah, and he's a great three-point shooter. And then one person that got injured, this was around the beginning of January, was Dylan Brooks. He's not even on the team right now.
And he's a really good player.
Yeah, he was out with an ankle injury. He should be back early March. But he was averaging a little over 18 points a game.
Yeah, and I think throughout this year he just wasn't healthy in general and missed a lot of games. Not just, you know, he missed them in January because of the ankle injury, but he's just been out a lot in general this year, and he's still averaging 18. Normally he could easily average 20 in this league, so you could have, you know, three members on that team that could average 18, 20 plus a game. You know, that's going to make the Grizzlies really scary. And the fact that they're still super young, a lot of them are still on the rookie deals. I mean, this team could have a core group of guys for a long, long time. And the fact that in their second or third year as a group entirely, their third seed in the playoffs is they would, in the East, they probably would, if the Grizzlies were in the Eastern Conference, they'd probably be dominating over everybody. But the problem is the Western Conference has two teams called the Phoenix Suns and the Golden State Warriors. So
seems like they're going to be there for quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, the Grizz, yeah, definitely. And I think we'll see how good the Grizzlies are going to get, you know? And I mean, like the crazy thing is they're a number three team in the West, and they're really, really, really good. But they're still super young and have so much potential. Like, that's the craziest thing to think about is, like, they're not even there at their max potential yet. Like, they can get, they're only going to get better and better as long as they stay as a core, and obviously they're all healthy. But, yeah, I think the Grizzlies are going to be a very special team this year. And I think not just for this year, but for the future, people are going to be going to Memphis like crazy, you know, to watch the team and to cheer on Ja Morant. Ja Morant's going to, is probably gaining thousands of fans a day. So it's going to be, you know, there's your superstar of the league in the future right there. Whenever LeBron and Kevin Durant and Giannis are gone, you got Ja Morant, who's going to be a future star. And it's crazy. I watched Stephen A, and he said, he gave a unique comparison. He compared Ja Morant to Kevin Durant in this way. Both of them were number two overall picks. When a lot of people think they could have been number one, but number one was highlighted by a player, a bigger guy, power forward center player, who everybody out of college thought they were going to be really, really, really good. But then due to injuries and due to unforeseen circumstances, they didn't really work out, while the number two overall guy becomes the best player in that draft. So with Kevin Durant, it was Greg Oden, as I said, and that man had some, he was good in college, and like if he stayed healthy, he could have had a great career, but he kept on blowing out his knees every year and, you know, never stayed healthy. And now, you know, Morant was number two, and number one, Zion. And as we talked about in the last podcast, we really don't know what's going on with him health-wise, you know, and what's going on there, so.
As long as he doesn't eat too many Krispy Kreme donuts.
As they joked about on Pat McAfee's show, doesn't eat gallons of ice cream.
No, we definitely don't want that.
We don't want that. So we'll see what happens.
And don't go to Mardi Gras.
Yep. Well, yeah, Mardi Gras is going on right now. But, yeah, we'll see what happens. But, yeah, Morant's superstar in the league. And
yeah, they went in 2019-20 season, which did involve COVID. They went 34-39. This year, 42-20. Yeah. So it's impressive what's going on.
It's very impressive. Very impressive.
I used to really like the Grizzlies when it was Grind City with like Tony Allen, Mike Conley, Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph.
Man, that was such a fun team to watch.
I kind of liked it because they were just nitty gritty. Let's get in it. But this team is a whole different ballgame.
Oh, yes.
This brings the Grizzlies far away from that.
No, yeah, this is probably the best. These are, it's crazy to think that these we're watching. Well, Morant maybe probably is the greatest player to ever play for the Grizzlies already. Yep. Almost. He's basically there. And then you got guys like Brooks and Jaren Jackson Jr. and Desmond Bane, who are going to be there for a, well, as long as, you know, everything works out. They're going to be there probably for a long, long time. So it's crazy to think that they have, like, three to four of the best players ever in the history of the Grizzlies are playing on the team this year right now. And so it's crazy to think about how much they've grown and that, yeah, it's, you know, it's great to see the Grizzlies play good again, because whenever they were that grinding, just, you know, they didn't have, like, the superstars, but they were just a team that knew how to win games and knew how to play defense. And, you know, seeing that, you know, it was fun when in the league. I was enjoying watching the NBA when the Grizzlies were good. So now seeing the Grizzlies good again is going to make me happy, and hopefully it makes a lot of people happy watching the Grizzlies play good. So
yeah, I've enjoyed it a lot. It's been good.
So are we ready to transition to our next sport, Garrett?
Yes, one of your favorite
sports. Yep, it is probably, well, I say it's, well, I don't know. I mean, it's one of, definitely one of my favorite sports. I say
it's mine too, so I, yeah.
Well, like, it's, I say it's definitely one of my favorites because I actually compete in it. Not professionally yet. Hopefully that day comes sooner rather than later. But we're talking about professional bowling on the Patio Pod for the first time ever. Woo-hoo! That's right. We're talking about the PBA because last weekend, last Sunday, they had their third major of the year, and it was the PBA Tournament of Champions.
What is this like in other sports? What does it compare to?
Major-wise?
Yes.
I could say the Open.
Yep. In golf?
In golf. Mm-hmm. Just that other major, you know, because obviously, you know, we got the Masters and the U.S. Open. I know with the PBA, there's also the World Championship and the Touring Players, which I know the golf has the players. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would say it's like the Open.
Yeah.
That would probably be the best comparison to it. Is there like a World Championship in the PGA? We're talking about another sport here now on the Patio Podcast, but
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure.
I'm going to say no.
Yeah, because I think golf has four majors, so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that that's a good comparison, and it's a very hard tournament. They bowl, like, if you make just getting to the stepladder finals, you bowl, like, 42 games this week. 45.
Can you imagine doing that many games?
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, I was, you know, on one of the videos, YouTube videos that we support, Brad and Kyle. Kyle made match play, and he was, like, icing himself. Like, he had a package of ice on his shoulder every night after he was bowling. And he's like, yeah, I can't feel my right arm right now. So that was very, you know, that just tells you that it's bowling's a sport and it's hard and it's grueling and definitely shouldn't be taken for granted what these professional bowlers do, you know?
If you go out like Friday night with your buddies, you'd probably do like two games.
Yeah.
Maybe three. And you might need some refreshments to help make the night go better.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't have bumpers.
Yeah.
So these people, yeah, like you said, 42 games. Like, Tyler and I both bowl some, and we normally do around 6 games a night, I'd say, if we go practice.
Yes.
And we're pretty tired after that.
Yeah.
So
I think the most I've done in a game is, like, in a day, excuse me, is, like, 12 or 13.
Were you dead after that?
Yeah, I felt pretty
dead. Was your arm falling off?
Yeah, like, after the 12 or 13 game, it was like, I need to stop and go home and go to bed. Shout out. I worked at a bowling alley for a little bit, and the best part about working at a bowling alley is you get to bowl for free. So there were some nights after when the bowling alley was closed, I would practice till like 12 or 1 in the morning. So that was fun.
Nice. But
one of those nights that I remember, yeah, I practiced like 12 or 13 games. And mom's like, are you going to go home soon? I'm like, I'm going to practice for a little bit, so I'll probably be out till like 12 or 1 in the morning. So just part of working at the bowling alley, but yeah, so that's the most I've done in a day, and yeah, it's definitely grueling, which I'll say, like, with most tournaments, the most you might bowl in a day is, like, 16, which it's, like, you bowl, like, 7 or 8 games in the morning, Then you get lunch, have a lunch break that's like 2 or 3 hours, and then you bowl another 8 games at the end of the night. So, you're bowling for like 12 hours straight. Well, 12 hours, you know, you're in bowling mode, and then you have like a 3 hour lunch break. So, yep. Shout out. There's, I think it's called 10 Pin Life on YouTube. They did some behind the scenes stuff of, you know, qualifying, and they actually had EJ Taggett mic'd up, and it was really cool to watch, you know, just the. I mean, it's kind of funny how, like, uncensored it was. Because you definitely will hear quite a few beeps in it from EJ getting mad at himself, which is very relatable. But that shows the grind and everything that goes on qualifying. And shows all the mental and, like, math stuff they have to do in bowling. And it's really, really good to watch. So I would encourage for our listeners to watch that and to support them.
Yes.
But let's talk about the actual tournament and who won it. Because the winner was England's Dom Barrett. This was his 9th career PBA title, his 3rd major, and he actually is the 8th bowler in PBA history to win the Triple Crown, which the Triple Crown in bowling is the Tournament of Champions, the U.S. Open, and the World Championship. That's right, those are the 3 tournaments, which if you win those, you win the Triple Crown. And what's really really, really cool is that he's the first European in PBA history to win the Triple Crown.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Yes, he is the first European to win. And I have to admit, I got to say, it was very good to watch him win that tournament, you know. I was rooting for him or Prather. I thought one of those two were going to win it. And in the end, it was him, and it was very, very popular victory because I know we'll just go into it now. Dom Barrett had, like, some really bad issues where he lost his swing, lost his touch.
Yes.
And had to fight that for like 2 years. So imagine like going into a bowling tournament where you have to bowl good to make money. Like he's a professional bowler. He's bowling to make his cash, to make money. And that during that, you know, you're trying to bowl and try to bowl the best you can. It's like, oh yeah, my game is terrible right now. I have an inconsistent arm swing. I have no touch. I don't know where the ball is going to go off my hand. And so, like, imagine that mental struggle. And someone who's, you know, before he won today, he was going to be a Hall of Famer in the PBA, when he won on Sunday, excuse me. And that now, you know, he won and he's a Triple Crown winner. And Dom Barrett looks back. And, you know, him being back, it's going to be very scary for most of the bowlers out there on tour because he's probably one of the best, if not, I would say he's one of the top 3 best one-handed bowlers out there on tour and definitely a top 5, top 10 talent in general. So him,
he's got a nice swing. It's a good.
He has one of the best arm swings in bowling, and to see, it's crazy to think that he lost that, but yeah. Now he's got it back. And one thing that was kind of a little bit emotional, I'm sure if my dad watched it, he would have cried, but he, like, FaceTimed, like, right after he won, he FaceTimed his wife, who is in England, and, like, called her and told her how much that he loved her. And, like, she could see, like, she was super giddy and super excited on the phone. So, like, that was really touching, and that was really sweet watching that, so.
Yeah, and I think it was great to see that. And doesn't he have a young...
He does have a young son, and they showcased him, like, Dom showed video of like his younger son bowling. It was like really freaking cute because he's like 2 or 3 years old, and like he throws down the lane, he's like jumping, and like everybody in the commentators are laughing, and because like it's cute because you're watching like a 2 or 3 3-year-old little kid just like geeking out about bowling. So it's like, here you go, here's the next PBA superstar, right?
Yeah,
here.
What gets better than that, being a PBA bowler, professional bowler, and then your kid's like woohoo, excited about it too. So
no, yeah, I think, like, I mean, you know, obviously a lot of sports are like this with father son stuff, but that's like what's nice about bowling is that it's like you can, it's an easier sport to pass along to your kids than most other sports, and like it's a greater opportunity for you to actually compete with your kids no matter of how young or old they are and how young and old you are. So that's definitely one thing that's nice about bowling is that it's an easier, you would say probably an easier sport to pass on than compared to like NBA or baseball, yeah, or basketball or hockey or NASCAR. So
I wanted to kind of talk about bowling stepladder format that they do in these finals, because that's what they have to go through in order to get to winning the actual tournament.
Yes.
So, what can you say about that? Like, how does it work?
Like, how does the stepladder work?
Yes. So, there's what, 5 seeds?
So, normally, like, with bowling, it's you have top 4, top 5 make match play. And, like, that's determined from qualifying, bowling, how many games you have to bowl. And so, yeah, 5 versus 4. And then whoever wins faces number 3. Whoever wins faces number 2. And whoever wins that faces number 1. And the number 2 seed was Dom. Well, Dom Barrett was the number 2 seed.
Yes, so I want to kind of talk about the players that had to go through that stepladder format. So the first one was Tommy Jones.
Versus Sean Maldonado. Sean Candyman.
Maldonado, yes. It's kind of hard to pronounce it.
But yeah.
But, and Tommy Jones, he's a huge vet.
Veteran player. He's in the Hall of Famer.
In the Hall of Fame already.
20 PBA titles, so.
Great bowler, but he actually, like, lost his grip on the ball, or his thumb.
Yes, he was having issues where it would, like, swell one shot, and then it would, like, shrink the next.
Yeah, and just wouldn't have a consistent shot on the ball whenever he threw it.
I can relate to that because I bowled in a tournament where, you know, I was like, each shot I didn't know what my thumb was going to do. And like one shot it felt like I had grip in it and next shot I didn't. So like there was a couple of times where the ball just dropped right off my hand and would get through off the right. So yeah, I get like whenever I saw that and I saw him messing with his tape trying to adjust his thumb holes, I'm like, oh, I feel so bad for him right now. So
yeah, that's no fun.
No, not fun.
So then Maldonado actually won that match. His style is crazy. It's two-handed, and to me, it's something special. Like, if you've never tried throwing two-handed, it's a whole different ballgame.
It's really hard, by the way. So, like, for those pros like Bomo and Kyle Troop and Maldonado who can do it and win, like, it's hard to teach, and it's hard to be really, really good at that, so.
Because either you look like a caveman or you do it right.
I mean, like, our mom calls every single two-hander a caveman. She's like, we're bowling at a tournament, and she's watching me and then or watching us, and then she sees the kids bowling two-hand next to us, and she's like, well, there's a caveman. I'm like, Mom, you can't say that. But it's like, yeah, it's an interesting style. What makes Maldonado's style unique is that he hops at the end. If he didn't hop at the end, I think it wouldn't be that much of a issue, and it wouldn't make it look as unique. It maybe look it more like a traditional two-handed style. But I would say, like, with that hop, that's probably the thing that, like, what makes it the most unique is that signature hop that he has. And actually quite a few bowlers have that hop. DJ Archer, who's a one-handed bowler, has a hop whenever he, at the end, whenever he throws it, so.
Almost looks like they're playing hopscotch or something.
Yeah.
Set up the blocks and they're good to go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's something that he's always done in his game, and it's something that helps him with his timing, so, you know, whatever.
Hey, if it looks weird, but it works, why not?
I mean, it's a matter of how you release the ball. If the ball's great off your hand and it's consistent every time, then, you know, you can do whatever you want to do, you know, so.
So we went from him to Sean Rash, another great bowler.
Future Hall of Famer.
And he just didn't seem to have it either.
Just didn't have a good ball reaction. It was inconsistent, a little sloppy. So,
But, yeah, that was interesting. And then we go on, Dom Barrett. Mm-hmm. So Maldonado beat Sean Rash. Now we're at Dom Barrett against Maldonado.
Yes.
And what kind of surprised me watching that match was how Maldonado was really curving it.
Mm-hmm.
These people don't throw straight balls. Let's just make sure that you understand.
Unless they
that.
Throw urethane.
Yeah, and urethane's a whole other ball game.
We have to talk about that on another podcast.
And he was really hooking it from literally the left side of the lane to the right and then into the strike pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like that.
Yeah. No, yeah, and the crazy thing is if you watch qualifying and stuff, that's how you had to play this oil pattern, is that they were super. I'm going to try to explain this for those who don't know. It's called cliff, is technically the term. There's a lot of oil on the inside part of the lane, like in the middle part of the lane, but on the outside corners near the gutter, it's super dry.
No oil.
No oil. So you have to throw it way out there. You have to stay way left, throw it way to the right, and then where it literally, I mean, I saw some watching like qualifying stuff. I saw some throw pro bowlers, sorry Kyle Sherman, throw it dead in the gutter because they missed too far to the right, but they have to throw it that far out to the right in order to, for them to come back and get a strike, because if they played it too straight, the lanes were going to break down and they couldn't keep it on the lanes. So that's the reason why Maldonado was playing that sharp angles, because he was doing that the whole week. So, but I just, you know, sometimes it just didn't work out. And we'll get deep into what I think is why he lost and why Don Barrett won. But
yeah, Don Barrett's shot was not at all like that.
Yes.
It was just a nice gradual hook. And yes, we will get to that. And then Don Barrett beats him. Mm-hmm. So now we're in the
title match.
We have Don Barrett and Chris Prather. Chris Prather, if you want to see a nice looking bowling release, that's one you look at.
He might be the best one-handed bowler out there on tour, or has one of the best one-handed games out there on tour.
Honestly, and why is that?
It's just because of his smooth release, smooth arm swing.
He can manipulate the ball.
He can manipulate the bowling ball. He can stand far to the left and hook it over the gutter and like loft it over the gutter. He shot 300 at the U.S. Open a couple of years ago, and that was on Brad and Kyle's channel, where he lofted the thing and like is throwing it way over the gutter and just set it down, and it would go all the way to the right gutter and hook back and strike every time. And like, yeah, him curving the lane, that's his A game, but he's really good at doing anything really, which if you're going to be a professional bowler, you have to be good at throwing it everywhere. But he's just got a very smooth, very beautiful game, and so does Don Barrett as well. Yeah, those are probably for surely the top two, maybe two of the top five best one-handed bowlers out there on tour. So,
and the match, it was pretty epic. It was good. But Don Barrett had that pocket dialed in, and mm-hmm. he was getting flush strikes. It was nice.
Yes, it was. And Chris had no carry. It was funny. He went on Brad and Kyle's video, like their last vlog. Brad and Kyle vlogged Chris because they're great friends with Chris. To see what he was gonna do, and he's like, "Yeah, I threw a great game, but the pins didn't want me to throw a good game." Basically, is what he said. Yeah, he left like two or three solid tens. He left two or three solid nines, and just because meant that, you know, he threw great shots. He just didn't have the right pin carry and didn't have the right ball motion. So
Don Barrett wins it, and that was fantastic.
Yes.
Now, I know we talked before. What about the finish of the bowling balls? How can that make a difference? I know this is...
So I'm going to try to, again, describe this for dummy terms. Shout out, like, from where we're sitting, I'm, like, sitting next to, like, my bowling ball corner over here. But, so one of the reasons, besides Don Barrett threw great shots, obviously, one of the reasons why I think Dom won is because he had the right ball in his hand. So Sean Maldonado and Chris Prather threw two bowling balls, that their cover stocks are called pearls. Now, pearls, if they see oil, they don't even read it whatsoever. Like, they just slide through the oil. They're meant to be super shiny, but when they get to dry, they hit dry.
Yeah, if something's shiny, you'd like to think that it's probably going to slide more.
Yes.
It's going to be more slippery, like you said.
Yes.
But you said as it gets the oil... Or no oil, sorry, then it reads.
It's really going to respond harder than the other two cover stocks that I guess we'll get deep into. The other one, which is, I'll go with this one first, is solid. There's such thing as a solid cover stock, and they tend to be more duller than a pearl ball. And they're going to read the lane initially, and they are going to try to grip even in the oil. So those cover stocks tend to be sometimes stronger than pearl cover stocks. But what Don Barrett was throwing,
the winner,
he was throwing a ball called the Columbia 300 Speed. And I might get one of those after that. Shout out.
I'm like closing my eyes in disgust because he already has a bajillion bowling balls.
Well, I need to replace them because they're old, but, anyway, so the Columbia 300 Speed, the cover stock on that ball is called a hybrid cover stock, which it has additives and features of a pro bowling ball as well as a solid bowling ball. So what was great about that is that, you know, if it went through the oil, it didn't really completely pick up on the oil. It was clean, another bowling term. It was clean through the fronts. It didn't try to pick up in the fronts, which is most hybrids or pearlized bowling balls are tend to do. But whenever it saw the dry, it didn't take off as much as, you know, what a pearl bowling ball could do. So he could play straighter angles and not hook it as much as a pearlized bowling ball, which, you know, they have to throw it way to the left and then throw it, stay way to the left and then throw it way to the right. And if you threw it too much in the oil, the ball just wasn't going to pick up. So that is why I think, you know, ball selection, which obviously, you know, I'm not saying like, oh, Don Barrett, you know, won not because of his talent and how good he threw it. He won it because he threw the right ball, which, I mean, you have to throw a good to win on tour, but and especially a major. But he also had the right ball in his hand, which is very important. And that's very hard, I will say. Whenever you bring like 5 or 6 bowling balls and you have to decide which one you're going to throw, and then when one looks bad, throwing the next, picking which one to throw next, like, it's very hard to pick the right ball. And Don Barrett did that, and now he's a Triple Crown winner. So
it's not just as simple as saying, wow, that bowling ball, that's pretty, I want to use it.
Yeah, it, sometimes colors don't do justice, you know. It's just sometimes the ball is the ball that works, you know, which Barrett had the right ball. And yeah, to say at least, since I follow Columbia 300 on Instagram, they have been posting that ball like crazy. They're like, Don Barrett won with it.
Might as well.
You can win with it too. And so get your pre-orders yours now. So I'm like, well, this summer when I work a job, I might get that one and add it to my arsenal. So,
but the good thing about him having a lot of bowling balls is that I can maybe buy them from him, the old ones.
Now, yes, I'm planning on getting a lot of them replaced, so they're yours for the taking. So
there you go.
But I want to add one little thing, because you talked about stepladder, and I was going to talk about this. Here's a random stat of the night. All three major winners this year on the PBA Tour have come from the number 2 seat.
Really?
Jason Belmonte, when he won the Players, he was the number 2 seat. Anthony Simonson, when he won the U.S. Open, he was the number 2 seed. Don Barrett, as the Tournament of Champions winner, he was the number 2 seed.
I think this is a great point. The first seed, top seed, you bowl last, but you only get, what, like 4 shots of practice?
4 to 6 shots of practice, yes.
And the other bowlers before them, even though they're, well, higher seeds or whatever way, they get to practice by bowling more games, kind of, before them. So, is being the second seed probably better than being the first?
It just depends, really, you know, because, yeah, it's like, this is just a funny trend for now, but I was jokingly going to say, you know, hey, for the World Championship, which I think is next week, you should probably go with the number 2 seed, but, you know, it just really depends on who has the right ball reaction, who makes the better shots, who makes the right adjustments. You know, yeah, it's just kind of ironic that all three winners have been the number 1 seat. I mean, excuse me, the number 2 seat. But we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens with the World Championship next week, you know.
Yeah, it should be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it does depend. It just depends on what's going on with the lanes, you know. I've done great bowling in a 9, which is just a 9-pin tournament. But some of the best I did in a 9-pin tournament, I was the number 4 seat. And I went, you know, I beat the 3 seed and then beat the 2 seed and then 1 seed. And I had to make minor adjustments, but I unfortunately lost because the 1 seed bowled really good. But, you know, it's just a matter of how the lanes break down and if you can fight the transition, because that's probably one of the hardest things in bowling is, like, whenever the lanes break down and break down suddenly to where you can't just move a little bit to the left or whatever, you know, finding that and, like, you only have, like, 10 frames to do that, if that, you have to, like, make sure you get the transition right and maybe 1 or 2 shots. Because because 1 or 2 open frames will, you know, in 10 frames, you know, that's you having 2 open frames, you know, you're done, basically, unless your other opponent does worse. But, you know, yeah, that's, and I mean, yeah, Bowling is hard. That is all we can say, is bowling is a very, very hard sport.
It's very difficult.
Very, very difficult. So for those pro bowlers, as you know, maybe give them a tap on their back because they're bowling a really, really hard sport. So,
and hey, if you want to start bowling and get serious about it, go to a bowling alley, join a league, and that's a good start.
Oh, yes. No, yes.
Because a league does not have to have professional players.
No.
It can have whoever you want. Friends can go on it, and it's a good time.
Oh, no, yeah. League's a lot of fun to bowl with. You make great lifelong friends on league. I know I've done that, so made some great friends, and they always have your support, so.
Yeah. So, man, it was a big weekend in sports.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Next, we have the IndyCar race.
Yes, NTT IndyCar Series.
Yeah, so I went throwing a bowling ball, driving a car. I know. It's.
Yeah. I mean, hey, the patio pod, we talk about everything.
We talk here about all sports. We are not inclusive or whatever.
We are not biased towards one sport. We want to talk about them all. And hey, we're going to talk. We're talking about the most unique ones that don't really get podcasts made about. But yeah, we're talking about NTT Data IndyCar Series. They had their opening race, the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. And the winner was a first-time winner who won on the pole. It was New Zealand's Scott McLaughlin. And he drives for Team Penske, which is like the biggest, best team in IndyCar.
Mm-hmm.
But this is his second full-time year, and he won first race out, which is great. But what was interesting about Scott McLaughlin, and this will kind of transition us into NASCAR maybe a little bit as well, is he came from a series called the V8 Supercar Series in Australia. That is Australia's biggest motorsport.
Kind of like Australian's NASCAR.
Yes.
A smidge.
Very, it is very close to that. And now with these next-gen cars, they're actually more close to a V8 Supercar. So, but yeah, that's where Scott came from. And was one of the greatest drivers ever to come from the VA Supercar Series.
Won How many championships did he win?
I think like three championships. Three. Like, he's won 56-plus races. One of the most dominant, one of the best drivers in the VA
Supercar. He's like the Tony Stewart.
Like the Tony Stewart or even the Jimmy Johnson, you know, of that series. And but he made the big jump to IndyCar. And he, I mean, yeah, second full year of driving a completely different vehicle, wins a race. And yeah, I know you said that he said that he was, you know, first year, like, was kind of really beating himself up.
Yeah, he wasn't finishing very well. But Penske, the team owner, went to him, like, you have to realize, you just started driving this brand new vehicle that you're not used to.
Yes.
Just give it some time, and you'll get used to it. One thing I want to add is this statistic that I found is that the IndyCar drivers that win the first race, like the last few seasons, they've gone on to win the championship.
Yes.
Do you think that'll happen with him?
Honestly, that's a very good possibility because he is an incredible race car driver. And I think definitely he's in the category of once he wins, the floodgates are going to open. So now since he knows how to win and, you know, has figured out how to drive these IndyCars, I mean, we're going to see. I think IndyCar is about ready to get run over by this guy. So we're very, I think there's a very great chance this guy, Scott McLaughlin, will be the 2022 IndyCar champion. You know, obviously there's Alex Palou, who was last year's champion. You got two-time champion. You got two-time champion Joseph Newgarden, who is Scott McLaughlin's teammate. You got another one of McLaughlin's teammates, Will Power, not to mention Alexander Rossi with Andretti. Colton Herta, who's with Andretti. I mean, we haven't talked about the greatest IndyCar driver of all time, Scott Dixon, yet. So it's definitely, it's a very competitive series, but Scott McLaughlin's definitely going to put his name in there as a potential IndyCar champion. And I think he's definitely a favorite this year. So,
do you think it's good for the sport to have people come from other racing series to come into something like IndyCar?
Well, what it's showing is that that's a yes, which is not, unfortunately, it's not, which, except for McLaughlin. McLaughlin's going to be an incredible driver, and Romain Grosjean, who's an old former Formula One driver, who's now driving for IndyCar and is driving for Andretti, he's definitely, you know, they brought along fans, Jimmy Johnson is now driving an IndyCar full time. He's brought along fans.
And so, good sponsors, too.
And good sponsors.
But is he great in it yet? No.
But to be fair, he's not driven anything like this.
Yeah, this is a whole different ballgame, although he's always kept in shape. Yes. Which is, definitely helps. But one thing is, Jimmy Johnson, he was kind of going slow in this past race.
Yes, he was.
And someone named Will Power, which is a great name, first off.
Yes.
For any car driver. But Jimmy Johnson was kind of holding him up. And Will Power was like, mm-mm. They need to blue flag this guy and let me go. Get Jimmy out of here. He's old. But, which, don't tell my mom that because that's her favorite driver
is Jimmy
of all time. But I don't know. I think Jimmy needs to drive this year in IndyCar and then seriously think about what the heck he's doing.
Well, I want to get into this, and I know we kind of talked about getting into this. But whenever I hear Will Power complain, I just laugh. Because every time, this man, if there's a fly in his way, he'll complain about the fly, okay? Like, I think he's the Kyle Busch of IndyCar. That he is very emotional, very passionate.
I could see that. Yeah.
But sometimes he gets mad over the littlest things. It's really, really funny. Like, if you just pass him the wrong way or you give him the wrong look, he wants to, like, flip you off and yell at you and say everything bad about you and your family. But, I mean, he's a character, though. And
they put pickles on my hamburger? I don't like pickles.
Oh, my gosh. By the way, Will Power is Australian, so, like, he's one of my favorite. He's from Toowoomba. Everybody makes fun of him for that, but anyway, it's really funny. And what honestly, like, one of my things, and what we kind of talked about, you know, other drivers coming in from other sports, it sometimes bothers me that some of the IndyCar drivers are not as popular as NASCAR drivers. Because there are some great, hilarious characters that if you just follow them on social media, you're like, I want to like this guy. Alexander Rossi is the American bad, you know what, character. Everybody loves him. Joseph Newgarden is hilarious, and he's, you know, American. So it's like American athlete competing in an international. Well, now IndyCar is more Americanized, but, you know, a sport that a lot of athletes from around the world compete in. It's like, you know, you got, if you have an American root for Joseph Newgarden. You know, you got Colton Herta and another, a kid who's going to be a superstar, and someone, a kid who's going to be going to Formula One very, very soon. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Simon Pagenaud is absolutely hilarious. You should watch the videos he has done with Penske where he's made an absolute fool of himself. So, like, he's a character. You got other guys like Connor Daly, Award, who's a Mexican, who's a great kid. There's a lot of characters in IndyCar that I feel like should be more popular, and if they have their proper marketing, you know, could be some of the most popular athletes in America. So, mm-hmm. It definitely, like, it bothers me that, like, some of these guys, which aren't popular, which, hey, Patio Pod listeners, do your job. Start watching IndyCar and start following some of these guys on social media because they're great. They're hilarious followers on Instagram. So, definitely support these drivers, and I mean, that's all you gotta do is you gotta market to people who haven't heard of IndyCar and say, oh yeah, here's this great character, Joseph Newgarden, who's a really great guy, who's an American, who's really funny. You got Scott Dixon, who is 7-time champion, who is like the most professional, most nicest guy on the planet. You got Alexander Rossi, who is just a warrior, rough rider, has done some stuff with an IndyCar that most people have never seen before in IndyCar.
Has he Dukes of Hazzard it? Has he, like, jumped off?
He has not Dukes of Hazzard it, but he's dirt track. I don't think anybody wants to see an IndyCar Dukes of Hazzard it. As I've seen it before, and it has not turned out pretty. But he has Dukes of Hazzard it by just sliding this thing. Like, he, like, slid this thing through a corner at Texas Motor Speedway going 230 to miss this wreck. And
230.
somehow kept the car going straight. And I mean, he had it like this, going 230, missing these two cars. He had his wheel like cocked all the way. Like, he was turning right to go left with an Indy car at Texas Motor Speedway. So it was one of the craziest. You got to watch this video. And then the stuff he's done at the Indy 500 when he gets mad. Oh, man, you would want to. You got to watch it. It's incredible. So, yeah, I think that there's, you know, there's some amazing characters, some great follows, and some great people in IndyCar. And hopefully one day the sport will get the recognition it deserves. And you don't need, even though it's very nice, you don't need guys like Scott McLaughlin, where you get a bunch of more Australian fans. You get Jimmy Johnson, which is a lot more NASCAR fans. And then one day when Kyle Larson wins the Indy 500, which will get a lot of fans when he does that, hopefully next year, then we'll see what goes on.
I'm going to ignore that.
But anyways, moving on to the next topic.
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, what are we going to talk about with the next topic? We've NASCAR, already said his name.
Kyle Dingbat Larson.
Okay, so being biased, I don't know if I said it on the first podcast. The man talking right now, myself, I'm a very big Kyle Larson fan, all right? And so, if you don't know, we won Fontana on Sunday. And it was, even though there was one moment that we're going to talk about that made me sick to my stomach, it was a very, very, very happy day. I wore my Larson stuff to church and to school yesterday and on Sunday, and so
yeah, if you wear your Larson stuff to church, you know, it's a big deal.
It's a big deal. But yeah, so he won, but the thing that happened is that there was some contact while battling for the lead with his teammate, most popular driver in NASCAR, Chase Elliott.
I couldn't believe when I watched this. I was so upset. So, Kyle Larson was trying to side draft the car on the bottom,
Joey Logano,
who, when he drives, is a dingbat. Well, side draft
Joey Logano.
Side draft him, and then he notices, or something, another car at the top. So he's like, I gotta block that one. So he drives his car up, and guess who it is? His teammate, Chase Elliott. And he kind of hits him a little bit.
Oh, he hit him.
And causes him to go into the wall.
And break the suspension on the right side of his car.
And first thing, before we continue, even though Chase Elliott was kind of in a wreck, he did do one thing right. And what is that?
What did he do right?
He buckled up in a rabbit lab. This is your daily notification. You should buckle up and ride alive. If you don't, you might not make it.
Might not make it.
But if you do, you'll make it out alive like Chase Elliott. Thank you.
Alright. You can wreck twice and spin out twice, but Chase Elliott almost won that race because he buckled up and he wrecked alive. That's our new favorite segment, by the way.
But what his car, it got damaged, but it was still able to drive. That's kind of a testament to these next gen cars.
It is. I mean, so what's one of the big problems right now is the suspension. And I guess with these composite bodies, they're not going to, like, if you see these things wrecked, they're not going to, like, you're not going to see a lot of damage with these things.
No.
Because they're not made to, like, completely shred itself.
Made of tin.
Made of plastic, it looks like. But what the new cars are doing, and what's kind of I don't know if it's an issue, but, like, when they hit the wall, they're not really going to damage the body. It's all going to go into their suspension. And so what happened with Chase when he first hit the wall is that he had like a minor suspension park break, had a pit. I think he lost 2 laps because of it. Well, he also spun out too, which that doesn't help. But he was able to rebound.
He was all discombobulated.
Come back. And he was one of the fastest cars on track again. So it was very, it showed, you know, body-wise, with the bodies of these cars, that they're very, very strong. So,
but what about the tires?
Well, I don't think tire wear was an issue unless you are Tyler Reddick. Oh, man.
He had a fantastic car. He was going to win that race.
He was going to win that race. He led 90 laps. Most dominant car. The most laps he's led in his career before this race was 70. He led 90 in one race. But while leading, his left rear tire goes down, and William Byron doesn't realize he's there and slammed right into the side of him. Which that just happens, you know. Unfortunately, I've seen, well, bring up the guy. Kyle Larson was leading on the last lap at Pocono last year, and going into turn three, his right front blew out, and he smacked the wall and gave the win to Alex Bowman. So it's happened. I was amazed by, I guess we can go into, I was amazed by, like, there wasn't really much tire wear at Fontana. Because normally, like, guys only last, like, 20 laps, and then they start blowing out their tires. But really, we only had, like, one major tire issue, so.
Well, the main thing, though, about this car and the new tires is that the old tires would have, like, a safety, like, an extra layer, where they can still run them.
Yes.
And it won't, like, hurt anything. This car doesn't have that extra layer on the tire.
Yes.
So
whenever they spin out, they can't even roll, so they have to pick up. They can't even move, so they have to pick up the car.
You gotta call in Mater in here and pick it up.
Told Mater, you gotta do your job, man. And so yeah, like you have 10 minutes under caution because you have to pick up a car.
Oh, man.
And move them to pit row. So Dirty Mo Media, Door Bumper Clear. It's another NASCAR podcast where they have three spotters on, and they just go off on NASCAR on every single podcast. But they were one of the guys like, it should not take 10 minutes of us under caution because a car spun out. Because
what happens under caution is the cars, when they go around the track, that still counts. That's still laps off the race. So that's less laps that we actually get to watch of the race. Instead, it's when we got the Toyota Camry pace car driving them around. You know, so.
We have Clint Boyer interviewing drivers. We have a Clint Boyer fan. That's sarcasm over there.
Clint Boyer, we'll come back to him. We'll come back to broadcasting at the end.
But yeah, you know, that's definitely that was definitely an issue, which they definitely need to get. I don't know if they have an inner liner on these cars or not. I mean, they should for Pete's sake, because like
I remember Matt Kenseth saying there wasn't.
Okay. And I like Matt, and I trust Matt because he's a good commentator.
Well, what do you think? So, Kyle Larson, did he just not see his teammate? What the heck?
What happened is that his spotter owned the responsibility. Is that they were so focused on the 22,
mm-hmm.
they didn't even notice the 9 was there.
Do you think I believe that?
The man over there does not believe that, but he's still mad at Larson because Larson intentionally, which I will fair, he intentionally wrecked Justin Haley, who's Garrett's favorite driver.
Yeah.
He's still mad about that. So.
I'm calling this one strike two. Justin Haley was strike one. Kyle Larson gets one more, and then he's official ding, 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 ding bat.
Yeah, and then there will definitely be some arguments on the patio pod when we talk about NASCAR. Because whenever Larson wins 10 races this year, he's going to get mad at every single one of them. Mm. But yeah, I mean, another thing, even though, yeah, Garrett's not going to believe this whatsoever, is that you have to, like, arc these corners the right way. That's, like, kind of the science of NASCAR, is that you have to, like, arc the corners and, like, enter in one way and exit the other one and run the middle the right way. Because, like, if you don't do it wrong, you're not going to run a good corner and you might hit the wall. So you have to, like, go out.
Into Chase Elliott.
Unfortunately, there was another car there. But you have to, like, swing out to run the high side of the track, which is one of the parts of the track that...
It's one of the quicker lines.
Quicker lines.
Yeah.
And that's what Reddick was doing to dominate the race.
Yes, that's a good point, yeah.
Which Reddick's one of the best at that, so...
Yeah, one thing that Tyler Reddick does is he runs right next to the wall. Because if you run right next to the wall, you get the most banking, which gives you the ability to drive a lot faster than everyone else.
Yes.
So he's able to hug that wall, stay in the throttle most of the lap.
Yes. And he's not
run faster.
Yeah, and he knows how to run it, and he's not afraid to hit the wall either.
No.
Watch him win his Xfinity Championships when they were at Homestead, and he would run like inches away from the wall, and it was a spectacular thing to see. And yeah, the car had a few scrape marks on the side of it, but he didn't care because he won a championship. So,
but that's what it takes to be fantastic.
Yes. So whenever he goes to Homestead, where you have to run the wall to be really good there, just shoo in that he's probably gonna win that race. So
yeah, he still has one yet.
He's gonna win this year. It's gotta happen. I mean, he was gonna win that race if he didn't have a left rear tire go down, because no one was gonna stop him. Absolutely no one. And even with all those restarts, you know, unless he got dumped by Joey Logano, then he really wasn't gonna, nothing was gonna stop him. So he had the best car throughout the day, until he lost a tire and then William Byron ran into him. Which I kind of want to bring up one quick little quick discussion. I want to give shout out to Eric Jones and Petty GMS Racing.
I want to talk about this too. Yes.
They had the most consistent car all day. I think like the lowest they ran was 7th or 8th.
He finished the race 3rd.
He finished the race 3rd, ran 1st a lot of the race, ran 2nd a lot of the race, top 5 in general. I think the first outside he was like 7th or 8th. But he finished 3rd and was like right up there with Larson and then Suarez, which congrats to him on another great run. He was up there.
Like, what's significant about this new car is it allows all the teams, they have to use the same parts.
Yes.
They get them from the same places.
Same vendors, yes.
And then they all have similar cars right now. So the top team, teams like Hendrick, we have Penske, and Gibbs, mm-hmm. Normally those are like top 3 in the past few years.
Yes.
They always win because they have the best equipment. They can research and pour the most money into having.
They
the
have best a lot team. Of money.
Now we have Kyle Larson, he wins. Of course, he's the Hendrick team. Austin Dillon is 2nd. He's normally not good at these type of tracks.
He hasn't finished inside the top 10 at Homestead.
And he's RCR, which they used to be a really good team. And they're still okay. But
they're going to get good. I think they're showing that they're going to be back on top again.
They have Austin Dillon and also Tyler Reddick. So, and then Eric Jones, as he said, that's not a big team.
That's an affiliated RCR team is what that is.
Daniel Suarez is 4th.
Almost won. He was leading with 2 laps to go.
Who's his owner?
It is Justin Marks, which no one knows who that is. He does some stuff with GoPro, but the other owner is Mr. Worldwide Pitbull.
So, I mean, which is great. I am a big fan of all this because we're having some cars definitely in the top 10 that normally we wouldn't have.
Yes.
I mean, 9th is Daniel Hemric.
Colic Racing.
Yeah, which is a good team in the Xfinity, but now they've kind of spread into the...
They're going into the big league.
And you know who's also on that team?
Justin Haley. He's the, him and Allmendinger are like the stepchilds of
Colin. He's like the least dingbat of all the drivers right now, because he's my favorite.
He's your favorite. like with RCR and Trackhouse and Petty GMS, which that's weird to say, and Trackhouse and Colic. I think I said Trackhouse again, but whatever. I think I repeated one of those teams.
And Trackhouse. Oh, did I talk about Trackhouse?
Oh, I sound like an idiot. It's Patio Pop. You just ramble and talk like idiots. But these teams want to be good. And, like, it's crazy to think that maybe in the next 5 years, and maybe sooner because of this new car, these teams won't. They might be up there with the Hendricks and the Gibbs and the Stuart Haas and the Penske's. And, like, they want to be there. And, I mean, they got the funding and they can possibly do that. So, I mean, we'll see what will happen and we'll see how these teams are going to grow. But, yeah, it's definitely going to make it more of an even playing field now. But, I mean, I'm excited, you know. I mean, definitely it's going to be more important now than ever to actually win. Because, heck, maybe this is the year we get 16 different winners in NASCAR. Maybe we get more than 16 before the regular season's over with. To where there's a possibility where you can win and still miss the playoffs. So, like, that's definitely going to be something to keep an eye on, is will we get more than 16 winners this year? So,
yeah, that should be pretty interesting.
Which, if Kyle Larson wins, like, you know, 8 or 10 races, then we won't have to worry about that. But
now, by far, Kyle Larson, he won the race, but he did not have the best car. It was still Tyler Reddick before the shenanigans happened.
And then even after that happened, you know, Chase and Joey Logano, and heck, I would say even Eric Jones may have had better cars than he did.
Yes, so what do you think of a car that was probably like fourth best winning?
There are two things that stand out. One's the driver, the other one's the pit crew. You got a driver who, he can take a fourth place car and win with it. That, you're special, you're a superstar if you can do that. Because that's like what the likes of Tony Stewart, Jimmy Johnson, Jeff Gordon, like, they can win races and not have the best car. And then the pit crew, man, has the that is like the biggest thing, is that, like, that's the same thing that happened with Phoenix when Kyle won the championship. He had maybe the worst car out of the championship four, but in the last pit stop, he was the first off of pit road and took a top five car, not a winning car, top five car, and was able to hold off Truex to win the championship. So that's definitely one thing, is that you have pit crews. The pit crew's outstanding. And, you know, not many times can you say, oh, yeah, my pit crew can win me races, you know? But, and plus, when you have one of the most talented drivers on the planet, someone who everybody is begging, and Jeff Gordon is going to make happen, him running the Indy 500 probably next year. It won't happen this year, unfortunately, but next year, Kyle Larson's probably going to run the Indy 500, which, dang it, he might win that race. He is definitely the modern-day equivalent of an AJ Foyt or a Tony Stewart, who you can just put him in any kind of race vehicle. Heck, you can put him in the Gravedigger, and they can probably race that thing really good. So, yeah. I'm sorry. Yes, I know I'm the biased, popular Larson fan.
They can do a double front backflip.
You're going to be like the monster truck and then the backflip. If you have
watched any Monster Jam things, they take these massive monster trucks and just let them rip. And they do flips and all this crazy stuff that you couldn't think would ever be done. So,
yeah, here, there's another entertainment sport on the Patio Pod. I mean, watch the, I need to share this video on our Instagram page. One of the drivers of the Gravedigger did maybe the stupidest, ridiculous thing I have ever seen in a monster truck. I can't even describe what he did. I just need to post the video on our story, and then you just need to have your jaw drop by what you're gonna see. So
we got one main thing left. This new thing called Quick Takes.
Yes.
We're just gonna quickly cover some last few topics, and Tyler's gonna name them off, mm-hmm. and then we're just gonna quickly take like a minute or two and just give our thoughts.
Okay.
First,
do you want to start with broadcasting?
Yes. Actually, this is a big take still.
This is going to be a little bit of a big take.
Sorry, I forgot about that one. So, we have broadcasting.
Yes, and well, especially, we're going to talk about what Fox does in the Xfinity series. That is rather fascinating. First of all, I would like to say, whoever thought about getting Matt Kenseth to commentate that Cup Series race, thank you so much. He was awesome.
Better than Tony Stewart.
He was really, really good. And I was expecting him to be either really good or he was going to not talk a lot because somebody else in that commentating booth likes talking a lot. But Clint Boyer. But he actually worked really well with Clint. And I think that, you know, obviously he's got like 4 or 5 kids and does a lot with his family. So, like, obviously, you know, it takes a lot to be a commentator in the Cup Series. But after that, I would say get him. Make him a commentator because he was spectacular. But anyway, so that's a quick take. With the Xfinity series, going back to that, they have Fox does it to where they have Cup Series drivers.
So this commentate is the main, race. Main sport or the top league.
Yes, and Xfinity is like the AAA series of the.
Yeah, the Xfinity is like the G League.
Yes,
the
G League.
That's to the NBA.
That's a good comparison. But yeah, and so for those races, they get, you know, either one cup driver, or last week they had two cup drivers. It was Joey Logano and Ryan Blaney, and they were great. They were great in the booth. They were really, really, really funny.
I think it's surprising just how good these drivers are at, like, communicating on TV in a booth. I know if I had to do that, it would be like, I don't know what I'm saying.
No, yes. And, I mean, they're not the only two. Brad Keselowski's great at commentating. Kevin Harvick, I mean, he's done play-by-play because they do something called the Drivers Only, which I can't wait for that. That's going to be spectacular again.
It's just drivers, like it says, kind of, but running the whole thing.
Like running the whole thing. There's three drivers in the commentating booth. One of them, which is Harvick, does play-by-play. They have three Cup Series drivers in the pits that are like the pit road reporters. It is one of the best broadcasts in all sports, I would dare say. It's like very, very entertaining. And like they do a really, really good job. And then also, Denny's great. He's had some memorable calls, which who would have thought Denny Hamlin has some memorable calls
in Xfinity? But, you know, Denny is, I think, bad.
We don't like him on, like, you know, him and Denny and Joey, we don't like him on Sunday. We like him on Saturday. If it's the Xfinity series, that's racing on Saturday.
Yeah, as long as he's commentating and not racing.
And then Kurt Busch, I mean, heck, he signed a contract to commentate truck races this year. And, like, I think he's going to do it every weekend that all three series are in town. He's going to do it. And, like, he does it whenever the playoffs is going on. So he's going to commentate the truck race. And even before he was supposed to sign with 2311, Fox was going to sign him to be the third commentator to go along with Clint. So, you know, like, he has that potential already where, like, Kurt Busch is already, you know, hey, you can either commentate and make, you know, maybe just, I don't know if it's the same money as not. As being a cup driver, or you can drive. So that's like kind of a crazy thing to see. But yeah, it's you know, it's really interesting. It's really, really good. And, you know, obviously the drivers are very they're very knowledgeable of, you know, what they're talking about because they're still driving. So,
and Kurt Busch and Kyle Busch, they're both brothers, and they're, yes, both still racing, but they're also both really smart.
Yes,
they can tell their pit crew what exactly is going wrong. Like, it feels like the spring in the back has a slight vibration. Not just, some of the back's vibrating, I don't know.
Yeah, no, like, there is some language where Kurt's, like, describing, like, the toe and, like, the photography. And, like, the, hey, you know, this, you know, hey, this suspension part in the car, you know, feels a little weird, you know. Trying to get my lateral grip into the turn one, and I'm like, what the heck are you talking about, Kurt? Like, jeez Louise.
What kind of physics is this?
But, I mean, that's why they're two champions and Hall of Famers, so.
That's true.
regardless of what they might say after the race sometimes, but.
But, like, going back to having the top league and whatever type drivers, commentator, whatever in the lower league.
Yes.
Well, we have that in NASCAR. We kind of have it in the NBA. Draymond Green signed a deal with TNT, actually. And he's been injured some, so he's actually commentated.
Yes.
Come in on a couple things.
And then, yeah, like last season, he was like a special guest, like a fourth host on Inside the NBA. So.
But do you think this really happens a lot outside of NASCAR?
So I was thinking back, and the only times I've really seen this, another sport we talked about tonight, PBA, they've done it to where Jason Belmonte's done some commentating to where, like, you know, which is like what's kind of nice slash not nice about it is that, you know, if you don't make the TV show, is that, hey, you could, you know, they had Belmo, like, commentate, like, all the Players' Championship last year. So he did, like, six shows. And then I think he did the World Championship as well. So Belmo commentated seven shows last year, and he was really, really good. And so that's another thing. And not only has Belmo done it, Chris Barnes has done it, and Barnes is going to be a commentator whenever he really stops being a pro bowler. Randy Peterson, who's now the current play-by-play guy, not play-by-play, color commentator.
If you haven't watched bowling, I know it might sound boring, but, man, Randy Peterson and Rob Stone, you can just look them up on YouTube.
They're great.
They're quite the combo.
They're great. Randy Peterson's great. But, like, early in his commentating career, he was still bowling out on tour. So, So where if you know, but like it wasn't in the prime of his career, unfortunately. So like,
if you don't make the show, you can still make the dough.
You can still make the dough by commentating. And so yeah, I know like just a random thing, but at the end of his career, obviously he decided to focus more on commentating and not on bowling because he really couldn't do both.
Which makes sense,
and that's why Barnes hasn't done it yet. Even though I could see Barnes has done it before, and Barnes is really good at commentating. And EJ Tackett's done it before. He's pretty good. I'm trying to think of other bowlers that have done it that I know.
But the PBA does it some.
Yes.
Are there any other sports like MLB or NHL?
I really haven't seen it in the NHL, per se. Mm-hmm. But I have seen it in baseball. With the Cardinals, they've had Wainwright's come into the booth. Like, whenever he's not pitching, obviously, because it's one of his rest days. He's come in to the booth like for a couple innings and talked and commentate the game. I think he actually did part of a playoff game this year because unfortunately the Cardinals lost in the wild card game. But which just sounds like this year is going to be his last whenever they get this season going. Don't be surprised if Wainwright goes in the commentating booth whenever he retires next year. They've done it to where they've had players in the during innings. Like if a player has an intentional rest day, which they actually have that in baseball, it's not just like a NBA, the player's just like, I don't feel it. Mm-hmm. Like they actually schedule days where they, you know, have off days. So that's when I've seen like Harrison Bader and others get into the commentating booth. So
yeah.
I really haven't seen it in the NFL, which like that would be kinda hard. I mean, you really can't, you know, you want Patrick Mahomes to play every game and like he's gonna be on the sideline every game. I think the only reason you can maybe see that in the NFL is if somebody's hurt. I think that's the only way you can maybe see that, or maybe when the playoffs are done, like if their team doesn't make the playoffs, they might do some stuff with playoff games, or maybe if they have a bye week, because that's true too, that you know, maybe on a bye week they do something. But yeah, I mean, like what's great, what makes, to be honest, like what makes like NASCAR and PBA great is just that aspect of it, is that you have the opportunity to where you hear current stars of the sport be commentators, and they're really, really funny. And I know NBA, I'm sure that's why NBA's, I mean, I'm not saying that like NBA is like looking at Fox NASCAR and being like, we need to do what NASCAR does, which I could be wrong. But I'm sure, you know, getting that insight from players who are still playing the game, like that's a big deal. And I think, you know,
it's important.
It's important.
And it's valuable, or just extremely valuable.
Yes.
For these, the TV shows and having that on TV, it really adds great element to it.
Yes. No, yes. It's going to, yeah. And so, heck, if you want to watch an Xfinity race, you know, watch it and hear Joey and Ryan make fun of each other, and then Ryan got mad at Fox because they didn't show his face on like a promo for the Cup Series race. That was really, really funny. But it's really, you know, it's great entertainment. And there's some, as like going back to like some of the stuff I've said, there are some great characters that are still in the sport that, you know, get them behind a mic and man, they can be really, really funny. And so, and like that's what we're seeing with Draymond Green. I mean, he's probably gonna, whenever he retires,
once Charles Barkley retires, I think Draymond Green might step into his place.
Yeah, I mean, well, like how old is he? Because like I think Charles' contract is up in like 2 years, but
Draymond Green's 31, so he still has a little bit.
He's still, I mean, winning like. There's a good chance he wins it this year, and that team's just getting better. So, like, you know, after 5 or 6 championships, I'm sure you're like, I'm good with a career. But you never know, so.
Very true. Let's see. So.
Now can we get into quick takes?
Let's do quick takes. After Tyler drinks his Coca-Cola.
My Coca-Cola. I've been, like, getting really addicted to Coca-Cola lately. That's probably a bad thing, but.
Kids, don't get addicted to Coca-Cola.
Don't get addicted to soda.
Don't vape, don't smoke, and don't Coca-Cola.
Don't drink nothing but Coca-Cola, even though I am drinking water a lot too, so I can enjoy a Coke. But our first quick take, which I'm mainly going to talk about this first one, is Ben Simmons. So it came out late last week, that Ben Simmons was going to be week by week with back tightness. And unfortunately, that tells me that's like what I kind of talked about in the first podcast, that when this man sat out for all those games, he probably was rarely in the gym, which that probably tells me that he mentally didn't even want to see a basketball, which is like scary to think about. But and unfortunately, it's unfortunate circumstances that Ben Simmons has gone through, but it's just the truth. So that's kind of really what my quick take is that as of now, the Nets might be losers of this trade. Plus, Kyrie still can't play because they dropped the vaccine mandate, but not if you're a worker. And technically, Kyrie's a worker for the city of New York, so.
Well, and he may be back on the floor before the playoffs. So that would be great for the Nets.
Yes.
To have that other person come in.
Yes.
And lead the show if they can.
So. Yes. And so our next quick take, which is what Garrett's going to talk about, is a team that we really haven't heard much on that last year were the number one seeds in the Western Conference, and that is the Utah Jazz.
The Utah Jazz were great. And then, what the heck happened? We get to this season, and we realize they weren't really a solid playoff contender. They weren't there for the championship. They were doing fine, and this year, like, they're still up there in the standings, but overall, they should just be a lot better than they are. I don't know, yeah. Like, if Donovan Mitchell or...
He's been hurt for a lot of these games.
Rudy Gobert is just going to have to figure something out.
Well, I know, like, earlier this season, there was some concern and some issues that Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert did not like each other.
Well, I remember with the Jazz when the whole COVID thing started, Rudy Gobert was one of the first ones to get COVID. And I know that Donovan Mitchell wasn't like all happy with that.
And well, because Donovan Mitchell got it too, even though he remained, like he wasn't, in fact, he was asymptomatic.
Yeah.
But like Mitchell was very mad at Gobert because like at the beginning he was making fun of it and he's like didn't take it seriously whatsoever and voila, he got it. So.
But they're fourth, which is still pretty good.
I mean, yeah, they're fourth.
But I just think they'll always be like a first, second round team and then leave.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, one of the main things is that the market really isn't that great. Which, I mean, look at Memphis. They're not really a super big market, no. But they got Ja Morant and the team's exciting. So they might be a big market in a few years. You never know.
They keep Ja Morant.
That's if they the keep drama. Well, we'll see. It's just a matter. Well, I mean, we saw what Giannis Antetokounmpo did with Milwaukee Bucks. Milwaukee is not a big market. Even though there were talks that Giannis didn't want to stay, he ended up staying, and they won a championship. So, hopefully, when players see that, that makes them want to be loyal to their team. Unless, I mean, there's obviously some situations where they probably need to go. Like, Damian Lillard needs to go.
Yep.
Zion, we'll see. Even though now they might, the Pelicans might make the play-in tournament, and they'll probably beat the Lakers, because they blew out the Lakers by 28 on Sunday night, so.
They're 27-33, the Lakers.
Ugh. Yeah.
But, you know, that's another podcast.
That's another podcast. That's episode 3.
So, what else we got?
I mean, the only other quick take that we could maybe talk about, which I know you want to talk about, was Cup drivers in the lower series.
We had Cole Custer win the race at Fontana this past weekend. Had a great car, did awesome. But he's not an Xfinity driver. He's a Cup driver. Do you think it's good for the sport to have the Cup drivers there? Or do we need to just let the Xfinity players, not players, but
Xfinity racers, drivers? Yeah. This was really a hot topic. This topic actually has kind of died out. But probably because Kyle Busch is no longer running Xfinity Series and winning 13 races a year. But my answer is no, mm-hmm. And I think that, and like if you even ask Xfinity drivers, they're gonna say no,
because they probably want the competition.
They want the competition.
To get better, yeah.
And like, you know, Harrison Burton, who's now in the Cup Series, he said he wanted to race against Kyle Busch because if he beats him on Saturday, then he'd say, hey, look, I can beat Kyle Busch on Saturday. I can beat him on Sunday as well if you sign me. So, like, that's important for Xfinity team and Xfinity drivers to develop because, I mean, hey, guess who you're going to – the goal is for Xfinity drivers, or, well, should be, is for them to be there on Sunday in the Cup Series. It's like, oh, hey, I already beat one of these Sunday guys already. Just get me there on Sunday, and I can beat him again. So it's very and NASCAR has done a lot restriction-wise on Cup Series drivers. I think, like, if you race in the Cup Series for 5-plus years, you can only run, like, 7 or 8 Xfinity races a year. And then if you're eligible for Cup points, you're not allowed to run any of the playoff races in the Xfinity Series or the Truck Series. I think, like, if you run, like, have, like, 5 years of experience in the Truck Series, you can only run 5 years of experience in the Cup race, you can only run 5 races in the Truck Series. So, unless you're eligible for Truck Series points, which, I mean, Kyle Busch isn't going to do that. So, yeah, that's, I know it was a hot topic, this a while back, but, you know, we'll see, you know, yeah, and Cole Custer, I'm sure he needed to win because he has not been very good in the Cup Series. So kind of having that taste of winning, you know, I'm sure that's got to make – I mean, winning a race has to make you feel good. And so Cole Custer going down there and winning a race, you know, darn it, that's got to make you feel good. And so that can maybe say – give him the mood to where, hey, I can win on Sunday, you know.
Yeah, it's true. And he did. I think for today.
That is it for today. That is it
on the patio pod.
Yes, this is it on the patio pod. This is the second episode. How long have you gone, Garrett?
Long enough.
Long enough? Do I even want to know or no?
Long enough.
Okay. More than an hour, to say at least. Mm-hmm. At more than an hour and a half?
No, but around there.
Around there? Okay, that's pretty good. We were kind of expecting that.
We record on GarageBand, so it just says we are at like 2,700 measures.
Oh, wow. Okay. But anyway, so we're there. But yes, thank you guys so much.
If you made it this far, you know, like and subscribe if you watch this on YouTube.
Yes.
We're working on getting this on Apple Podcasts, so we're getting a few more technical difficulties.
Yes.
And then we can't wait to see where you watch us from.
Oh, no, yes. And hopefully, we made some artwork on some merchandise, so maybe we got some merchandise where you can buy and support the patio pod. But yes, thank you guys so much. My name is Tyler Lynch. That is Garrett Lynch. And you have listened to episode 2 of the patio pod.